Coming up, Mike and I are back with another episode of Breakfast with the Beats, which is part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. First, I go through a new tool that I found that's helped me make trades in my league. Then, in our Beat Writer Roundup, we talk about Cole Kerrig's impact, Jack Caglione's home run derby quest, Pete Crow Armstrong's breakout, and Troy Melton's potential. After that, Mike and I go position by position, examining early round draft picks versus late round breakouts, and pick players that we like more for the second half of the season. Finally, in our mental health moment, we talk about our abilities to listen and reflect upon what's said and done in our lives. All of this in a jam-packed episode of Breakfast with the Beats, but first, a quick word.
Good morning, fantasy baseball friends and family. It's your old pal Mike Carter here back for episode 14 of Breakfast with the Beats. Dave, who was your favorite number 14 in all of history?
Oh, God. My favorite 14?
Yeah.
I'm not good with numbers. I got nothing here.
Is that why you teach kindergarten? Because you're not good with numbers?
I'm not good with like remembering the player numbers. Honestly, it's weird.
Well, I'm going to hang Ernie Banks on you.
Okay.
That's your favorite number 14. My favorite 14 was Pete Rose. God love him.
Okay.
As a baseball player, I idolized him. Obviously, as a human being, leaves a lot to be desired there for anyone to follow that example, I guess. But Dave, how are you doing this morning? Happy Saturday to you.
I'm doing well. I will get you a good answer by the end for the number 14, but I'm doing well. It's hot out. It's beautiful. It's sunny, as you can see by my backdrop. It's great. So summer's great. I love summer.
If you guys listened last week, Dave and I were debating not only the corn sweats, but also the heat and humidity. And Dave is a tall, thin, athletic type of guy, for those of you who've never seen him. And so he prefers the hot and sticky weather where he can get out on his bike and ride and have all this great stuff.
Dude,
I'm a middle-aged fat dude who doesn't exercise the way that he should be. Gets winded walking up a flight of stairs. And when it's 90 degrees outside and 95% humidity, you will see a cranky, cranky, cranky Mike Carter. So I'm just forewarning you, if any of you see me in those circumstances, boy, oh boy, it's not a good one for your old pal here.
Will we ever see that here? Like, will we ever get a cranky Carter?
I hope not.
There's a show title right there.
Yeah. Carter. Yeah. Davey Downer and, you know, yeah, cranky Carter. That's kind of funny.
Yeah.
All right, Dave. Well, we're heading into the All-Star break here after this weekend, and a lot of things are going on. Let's get right to it. I wanted to start off with an introductory question today and get your feedback on this. With the deadlines approaching in not only major leagues, but also in our fantasy baseball leagues for trades, less than a month to go in most places, which is kind of crazy. What's one tip that you have for listeners regarding getting the deal done?
So for me, it's understanding your league and it's understanding your league mates and understanding what they might need and stuff like that. So just recently I tried something new that I'd never tried before. So just a little bit of context. It's an odd new league, which has weird settings, but it's a very active league except for a few players who come in and out. So anyways, one player who's not really active made a move on the wire. So I realized he's active. He's on the thing. So I wanted to come up with a trade because there was someone who I really liked on his team, given the settings. So I wasn't sure what to do. So I actually used AI to
really.
Yeah, I used AI to go through the process. So what I did was I proposed a trade and then I gave the league settings, like the scoring. And then I also went through my rationale. I went through, well, I have this guy and here was the trade. I would be offering Gage Jump and Salvador Perez. This is a dynasty.
Right.
For Keider Montero from the Tigers. Now on paper, it doesn't sound good at all for me. However, given my league settings, I can't drop Salvador Perez for the rest of the year. And he's been terrible. And given the league settings, it's points per inning pitched for Ottinoo. So, you know, Gage Jump, especially at home, gave up all those home runs. I was in the negative. Keider Montero is great per inning. Regardless, what I'm trying to say is when I used AI, using telling him exactly what was going on in my league, my rationale and everything, it gave me not only the opinion of if I should do it or not, but it was explaining why I should do it, saying, you know, given Gage jumps upside, or given the league scoring for this, it's a good idea, or you can't drop Salvador Perez and he's been doing this all year and he's not helping you, you should make this deal. So I'm not proposing that everyone always does AI, because the human aspect of it is great, and it's great to communicate and talk. But for someone who was on a, felt like a time crunch to try and get a deal going, I felt it was very useful, and it actually helped me understand what I should be doing in a trade. And it's something that I do recommend to others.
And I'm not too worried about that use of it in fantasy baseball, right? I mean, if it helps you with process, then you should really go for it. And when you and I talk, or when we talk to any of our friends in the industry, or just fans and whatever, when we talk to those folks, we're not infallible. It's not like we're sitting on a papal throne somewhere and what we say is the law. You still have to analyze what you want to do, and you have to really make sure that it's going to be something that's going to benefit both you and the other team.
Yeah.
Too often we find ourselves in positions where somebody's trying to fleece another person, or then go to their friends and say, I got such and such for such and such. Wow, what a rip. Oh my God, this is fantastic. Everybody wants to feel good. And I think if you go into that mindset of it and say, hey, I want to feel good about what I'm getting, but I also want the other person that I'm trading with to feel like they're getting good value out of this. I use that context a lot. You know, if I'm in leagues where I'm a player or two away from being able to compete, I will try to go and get some grade of those players from teams that aren't doing as well. And I do that a lot of times in my home league by stockpiling prospects and then being willing to ship them off for something I need, you know. So yeah. I'll grab a Braden Montgomery, say, or Cole Carrig, who we'll talk about shortly, and then try to flip them for something that I might need at the deadline that will help me win. So it's helping a team that's losing to get another keeper on their roster while it's helping me try to win the championship that season. I'm not a big believer in rebuilding that in those leagues anyway, but yeah, definitely AI is worth checking out. And I know that in Arizona this year, you know, shameless plug for First Pitch Arizona. The dates just came out for that. I think it's November 5th through the 8th. If you've ever thought of going, or you're hedging on going, yes, I know it's money, but money comes and goes in life. It is a great experience. It's the best weekend of the year, and come down there. But they are also going to be talking this year, I know, about AI tools there. And that'll be something that I'll be very interested in attending and taking a look at. Okay, Dave, shifting to our beat writer roundup this week. And I just brought this guy up. It was somebody that we've been talking about off and on for a little while here. And that's Cole Carrig. Boy, he's really looking like the part right now for the Rockies. He's come up and I think I would say he's performed better than they probably thought he was going to initially. I didn't know that it was something that was going to stick. He's hitting .284 with 4 home runs and 2 stolen bases and 114 plate appearances, a .363 OBP. Dave, what do you think about Cole Carrig? Our old friend Thomas Harding had a nice article about him this week.
Yeah, the article was called Rockies Learning One Thing About Energetic Carrig. Quote, he wants it. And it was a great article because it just summarizes how fun this Rockies team really is. Mm-hmm. And right now, Carrig is, I don't want to say the heart and soul of it, but he's a very important part of it. It talks about how hard he works. It talks about how it's a new regime here in Colorado, which we've talked about before. Mm-hmm. He's a lovable and hardworking guy. And it talks about first about how just recently in Los Angeles, it was a homecoming of sorts for him. And then it went into more of the numbers and stuff like that. His first MLB hit was a triple. So it gushed about his speed. It gushed about his arm. He had a 100.9 mile per hour throw from the outfield, which was outstanding. Here's the thing, though. He had some awful splits against left-handed pitchers in the minors. And so far, it's been very good in the majors. I've liked him. I've added him. But there are some red flags that I'm kind of seeing.
There always are with young players, aren't there?
Always. Number one was a high chase rate in the minors. Mm-hmm. And what I've learned over the years is if they chase there, they're probably going to chase a little more here in the majors.
For sure.
And number two was his home and away splits. He's batting .348 at home, and he's batting .239 away from home, which isn't the greatest. But he is a young guy. He's an energetic guy, and he has the work rate to get on base, to work harder and adapt. I like him. I added him in one league, like I said, and I just think it's just another example of how these Rockies are a fun team to watch right now, and this new regime is really doing something to the team.
Well, I like what you had to say about that, because I see similarities between some of these teams that we were talking about offline, you know, the Nationals, the White Sox, the Marlins, that are these sort of exciting teams that are a mix of, you know, veterans and also some young guys that are performing. And what I find most encouraging about what the Rockies have done, Dave, is not showing up in the record. It's just the fact that they're letting these young guys have extended opportunities. They are not famous for giving those guys opportunities. No. They're famous for doing things like signing Ian Desmond to a 5-year contract for no reason. You know, that's what they were famous for. But this is a new regime, as you pointed out. So they have a nice blend of veteran guys, but they're also getting meaningful contributions from guys like Hunter Goodman, TJ Rumfield, Kerrig. Kyle Karros has been really good for them this year. And then they blend in the Jake McCarthys of the world, who's having his best year of his career. Mickey Moniak, who can play a little bit. Obviously, they still have a lot of work to do on the pitching side, but I think if I were a Rockies fan, I would be pretty encouraged by what we saw out of Gabriel Hughes this last week. Looks like he might be somebody that can actually help them in their rotation. I was very happy because I've had him rostered in my Dynasty League for about 4 years now. So I'm happy that he's finally made it up to the major leagues and making a contribution. But the Rockies are definitely a fun team. Okay, looking at the next one. I knew you were going to put this one in. I knew there was no way. I sort of make these little bets with myself all the time before we do the show. When you make the show sheet and I make the show sheet, about how one of us is going to kind of try to stick it at the other a little bit, but in a nice way, not in a mean-spirited, grumpy way like what we were talking about the other week, right? But take a look at this. Jack Caglione, all of a sudden, is really turning it around and having a very nice season. You found an article that was written by Ann Rogers and Billy Hadson this week talking about that and how he's joining the Home Run Derby next week. What did that article say, Dave?
Yeah, it just talked more about first the announcement of Jack Caglione getting there and how it reminded him of times with his family and playing catch with his dad and doing things. It was a great little story. And he said once he found out, it was an immediate yes. Then it talked about how last year and the year before in the minor leagues that he just surged right through. Last year in the minors, a .307 batting average and 20 home runs. He was obviously ready to come up, but when he did, he struggled. Mm-hmm. And it's only this year where he's actually been able to turn it on. He's someone that I've watched a lot of lately. I've watched a lot of Royals games, and when he's at bat, there's a presence there.
Yes.
He's, first of all, he's an immense man. He is huge, but he looks locked in at the plate, and it looks like there's nothing that's going to get by him. I know he still has a 30% strikeout rate, so that's not great. But when he hits the ball, it's hard and far. Yes. His 2026 home run average is tied for first at 418 feet. And that was before last night's home run. And I think he hit a 500-foot home run in college. Regardless, this guy looks tailor-made for the Home Run Derby.
Yes.
And I love watching him breaking out here. And it's something that I know the Royals as a whole have struggled, but they've really come back as of late, and I know Caglione is a part of that. I really like him, and I know that you're on the other side of the fence here, but I'm waving to you from this side. How's it going? I'm inviting you over. I'm going to have a door built to, like, a gate to let you in. But, I mean, we're still on the other side of the fence, but
I think the thing that when you look at Caglione, you know, you're right about all the things that have happened. I mean, I think when I saw him upticking in strikeouts earlier in the season, to me, that was the warning sign. But you can live with a 30% strikeout rate if you're putting up the numbers that he has. He's hitting 260, which is way better than I thought he was going to hit. and actually might be underperforming if you look at the metrics a little. 260 with 15 home runs and chipped in 3 stolen bases as well. And so if you drafted Caglione, you're probably ahead of me. Who, better question right now is who isn't ahead of me? But he is hitting the ball really, really hard, to your point. And I think getting Vinny Pasquantino back will allow him to shift back to right field. And Pasquantino, I believe, was back last night. So that will kind of lengthen that lineup a little bit more. You know, the Royals are underachieving, and you would think that they would be doing better. But again, they refuse to spend money on the outfield there. They've got some pretty young players there that are exciting. Carter Jensen's turning out to be a pretty good one already. Yeah. Obviously, Bobby Witt's there. But, you know, the bottom of their order right now is Michael Massey, Nick Lofton, and Isaac Collins. They're all fine players, but, you know, that doesn't feel like a playoff roster there. No. Me.
You know what, though? They, in June, I think they were about fifth or sixth in batting average in all of June as mm-hmm. a team. So there might be something there. For the first couple months, they were just awful. I don't know what it was. And they shouldn't have been with the new fences coming in.
Yeah, right, right.
It's weird just to see them all turn it on together as a team. I wonder if this is something maybe at the end of the season we'll find out. I don't know. The wind patterns or something just were different and they just couldn't hit. But they've been pretty good as a team as of late.
Yeah, for sure they have. And you know, I'm worried about the Sox because they've hit a little bit of a slump, and really what I would call the reality, I would think, not necessarily a slump, but they're about a 500 team. The
yeah,
Royals but definitely get into this thing here.
I kind of like the White Sox more than the Royals, I think.
Oh,
I
yeah.
think the White Sox can hold it off.
Sure, I agree. I hope so. We'll see what happens. Okay, Dave, our last article, my groan. I'll tell you why when we get through it, but just to further mess with me, Dave has found an article about Pete Crow Armstrong, the Cubs' enigmatic and electric center fielder. Talk a little bit about what you found there, Dave, because I think a lot of people are worried that there could be a second half slump coming, but he looks great so far, doesn't he?
He does. So this article is called How a Renewed Approach in the Box Led to PCA's Second All-Star Nod, and it's by Jordan Bastian. Now, I don't know why we're on the other side of the fence here, but I feel like I've built a wall now. It's not a gate or anything. There's a wall with a guard. So, but I'll go through what the article said, and maybe it will change your mind. I don't know. So the main change here right now is just discipline. And it's something that's been instilled upon him by the team and by players. And the quote here was, the message and concept were simple. Stay disciplined with the specific pitch or part of the strike zone in the crosshairs for any given at bat. Mm-hmm. Do not waver from that plan, even if it means watching a pitch drop in for a strike. So what he's been doing as a result, in 2026, he's got 41 walks. As opposed mm-hmm. to last year when he had 29 in all of 20 in the entire season.
Right.
So right now he's smarter. He's waiting for his pitch, and he's been taught this and enforced this by Bregman, who's come in. And what they do is they try and make a game out of it just to try and be patient and aware for what's coming, what should be coming from these pitchers. But also remember that other, you know, those small pitches that are barely ever thrown, they're going to be there too. So he's mm-hmm. got to just wait for the pitch that he really, really wants. I know he's tweaked his stance a little bit as well, and that's helped him out. But I am worried, like you said, about a possible second half slump. It's something that he just needs to be prepared for and not happen. Like last year, he hit 188 after August 1st. Yeah. So he seems like a different player this year. He seems like he's got a good approach. He's got some support. But it is something that I think fantasy managers need to be aware of, that he's still young enough where he can still, you know, make the same mistakes or make different mistakes for a unproductive second half.
Correct. And I, you know, thinking about PCA, and you and I have talked about it a lot, and this is a really good study of why you shouldn't have preconceived ideas about players or stay married to those things, because I had PCA last year in one of my leagues, and obviously the start that he got off to was remarkable, but he finished on my bench. You know, I mean, he became a player that was almost unplayable down the stretch last year. And so that kind of scared me off of him a little bit. I thought, you know, the K rate's only going to go up, the walk rate's going to go down. All these generalizations that I made about him without really doing the deep dive homework that I really needed to do. And he last year, he had a lot of trouble in the second half. I don't know if he was tired or what happened, but you know, just hitting fastballs, he was getting challenged by those. So if he can maintain those gains in discipline, which is hard for young players, there's spikes in energy level, there's spikes in enthusiasm for making those things. Will he slide back into bad habits? We don't know. But here's the thing. My personal bias this year against him really colored my perception of where I should roster him or if I should roster him on any teams. And I think of the 13 teams that I have, I think I have him in one place. And that just really goes to show you how you should really never say no to a player. I was pretty dead set against taking him in most places. The problem that I have is, you know, I see the guy play all the time because it's on the TV here last year. And so I was making these judgments about him without really going into the deep dive that I should have been. And so I do think that he can continue it. I think, you know, that White Sox and Cubs series where he kind of bottomed out and had a pretty rough series and had some, you know, attitude with his behavior and things like that had to be kind of called back in. It seems like maybe that was the wake-up call that he needed to be performing really well again. I will say, though, too, you know, you look at his metrics, and he's hitting right now a very robust .293. His expected batting average is actually 30 points lower than that. So those are some things. It depends on what you want to read into, right? Are there cracks there? I don't know that I would say that they're cracks, but his glove and his speed is so good that even if he slumps, he's going to play every day.
You know what, though? I don't go against what you did in the offseason. You saw a young player who came in who's known for his glove instead of his bat, who had an amazing first half, and I think the whole Cubs team did. And then they all tailed off. And, you know, he's, like I said, he's not known for his bat. He struggled. It's not like you were burnt by it.
Right.
It's something that you took note of, and the next year you didn't go in on it because chances are it wasn't going to happen again. But on the other side of it, I think what we need to do is understand that some of these guys are so young that they don't have that track record. So it's one thing if you know, for 4 years he was struggling and then all of a sudden he came out. But really it was just, what, a year and a half maybe? And then he struggled. I think we need to just remember track record does mean a lot. And the more often they've done it, the chances are they're going to do it again.
Correct.
But when they're so young, it's so fragile. They're so volatile. They could do it again, or, you know, what they do that's differently could be the new norm for them.
Right. Agreed. Yeah. Really good analysis there, Dave. I appreciate that. And then we had an extra bonus article today. We'll just cover this one quickly about Detroit's Troy Melton turning into a really solid player for Detroit, who's really trying to get back into this race in the American League Central. What did you find out about Melton?
Yeah, so Jason Beck wrote about Melton, learning from a master one move at a time. I'll just go through it quickly. He's been calm. He's been stoic. He's been in control of himself. He's young, but he looks like a veteran. And they made note of, after a game, the A's manager, Mark Kotze, was really impressed. And he said their hitters had never seen some of the things that he was throwing. Talked about how Yordan Alvarez was clueless at the plate against him. Those are a lot of big names to be saying, you know, we don't know what to do with him.
Right.
And I think the biggest thing is he's got a great pitch mix, which is fantastic. And a lot of the pitches look the same, but he's learning from the best right now. He's got Scooble on his side. He's got Verlander on his side. He's got a resurgent Jack Flaherty on his side. These are vets who have done it before, teaching someone how to do it for them. So I really like Troy Melton. And the article talks about if he could be a frontline starter. I think it's too soon to make that jump yet. But right now, he looks outstanding, and he's someone that I think needs to be rostered everywhere.
Well, Detroit, I think, is going to surprise a lot of people in the second half, because I think that they're going to be on the come. And the White Sox and the Guardians are at the top of that division right now playing .500 ball. And if the Tigers get onto a hot streak, that could carry over. I mean, Scooble has not looked great since he's been back. And I know you and I both were kind of mulling over whether or not he came back too soon. in an attempt to try to help them out. But they've also gotten good work from Casey Mize. Jack Flaherty has been much improved the last 2 weeks. Framber Valdez is going back and forth, looking like he might find it, but then walking four guys. It's just, he's been hard. But you know that those guys, like you said, the track record is there for them to be successful. And I'm very concerned about them in the AL Central.
Yeah, you know, they were my pick at the preseason to win the AL Central, and they really got off to a rough start. But
they did. They really did.
You know, they have the tools to actually compete and not just compete in that division, but maybe even compete in the American League, because honestly, I have no idea who's coming out of that.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't think anybody does. it's just been kind of a wild ride so far.
Yeah.
Okay, with that, Dave, we're going to take our first ad break, and we're going to come back with our Hey Now, You're an All-Star section. We'll be right back. All right, Dave, so we're at the All-Star break, and I know that we're both working and writing and doing all these things even over the break, even though there's not going to be any games, but we wanted to do a segment today just kind of talking about NFBC, ADP, where guys were drafted and who we would rather have rest of season. So Dave, what I'm going to do is we're going to go position by position and then we're going to compare two guys. We're going to give people the NFBC ADP that they had as well and discuss who we would rather have rest of season.
Yeah. So just to clarify, these are the fantasy MVPs, the fantasy all-stars, I think, of players that we have and then players that were drafted earlier and who we'd like better in the second half.
Okay, so our first one at catcher is Cal Raleigh, who was 18th pick overall, versus Dylan Dingler, who was 220.
Yeah, it's been quite a ride here for both. I don't know if Dylan Dingler can keep this up. I think he can. He's been really, really good to start the season, and you know, being drafted 220th overall.
Mm-hmm.
He could have been free for some people in one catcher leagues, but now he's worth a start. And then you got Cal Raleigh. I don't know. I don't know what to do with him. Is he healthy? Because he was hurt for most of the season this year.
Mm-hmm.
He's come back and he's striking out a lot. Some people might want to say last year was a fluke, but he was actually really good in the second half of 2024, which is why I was willing to give it a shot on Raleigh. I think going forward, though, I would take the chance that Dylan Dingler is what we're seeing right now and maybe just forget about Cal Raleigh.
Do you have any concerns about Dingler's thumb injury?
I don't. He's supposed to be day to day.
Okay.
I know at one point the day after they said on the broadcast that you could still see the imprint of the ball in his hand. So that's how hard it hit him.
Wow.
But yeah. But he's got this week off. I think the All-Star game came at the perfect time for him. So if they can get through this weekend without really needing him, I think he'll be fine next week.
Yeah, I think I'm leaning towards you with this one too. Although I think if you could get Raleigh as a buy low, it might not be a bad thought because he could hit home runs in bunches too if he starts, you know, seeing it and whatnot. I do think that I shouldn't say I think. I do wonder if part of the issue with him is a hidden injury. I mean, I think he's been battling all year. He's not a 165 hitter, although StatCast seems to think that maybe he actually is and that everything that's happened has been appropriate. So you would hope for some course correction here, but Dingler obviously has become, you know, probably the catcher one discussion here, and he was, you know, pick 220.
Yeah, it's been pretty good.
Okay, let's go to first base. And again, another one that you did on purpose to try to just draw my ire. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at pick 18 versus Wilson Contreras at pick 167.
I think going forward, I think I would actually rather have, I think honestly, I'd rather have Vlad Guerrero.
Mm-hmm.
It's really tough for a couple of reasons. Although I know Vlad, he's taking the All-Star break off for his back. So I'm assuming that over the break, he's going to get himself better. He's going to have almost a week off. Assuming he can come back fully healthy, I think he's going to have himself a great second half.
Mm-hmm.
Wilson Contreras, he's already matched last year's home run total. His batting average is way above what it's normally been. I know that bat is tailor-made for Fenway Park. But he also has a huge injury history, and he hasn't, knock on wood, hasn't been injured just yet. So I am kind of expecting a mid 30 years, or he's like 35, isn't he? 36.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sort of anticipating him getting injured at some point this season. Not just that, he just can't seem to get his anger under control. So I think he might miss some time in the second half. It feels weird to say he's the underdog here, but I'm going to take Vlad Guerrero in the second half.
Interesting about Vlad, though, if you look at his batting averages since May, so he hit 351 in April, which is the Vlad that we know and love.
Yeah.
But then followed that up with 232 in May, 198 in June, and 207 in July. And so if there is an injury there with the back, you know, I think I would hedge on the side of going for the upside that is there with Vlad, even though I did say last week, and I will stand by that, that I don't usually roster him. Because I don't know how much, I'm not really sure how much help he's going to give me. At this point, he's got a 262 batting average, 5 home runs, and 6 steals. So I guess he's helping you with steals a little bit, which is nice. But the 5 home runs, boy, you were really hoping for more at the All-Star break from Vladdy.
Yeah, I just hope he can get his back under control, if that's the case.
That's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
All right, shifting to second base. Again, another dig at your old pal Mike Carter here, guys. Fernando Tatis Jr. We've talked about my struggles with Fernando Tatis, although he's come around now, hasn't he? Fernando Tatis was a 14th pick overall in NFBC ADP. And you put him against an interesting guy here, Travis Pezzana.
Yeah, if you had asked me in March if we would be having this conversation, I would have thought you were crazy. But here we are right now. And I think the obvious answer is Tatis. I know we talked about this a couple weeks ago, that I think he's in for a great second half. He's underperformed. The StatCast metrics say he's going to do well. It's just crazy to me how well Pezzana has done. He's doing everything that we imagine. He's got power, he's got speed, mm-hmm. he's got patience. And if you're getting this out of your second baseman at pick 639, that means you've solidified your roster elsewhere. I don't know if Pezzana can keep this up, but if he has a decent second half, he could be a 15-15 bat. That being said, I think I would take Tatis for a monster second half.
Yeah, I'm hoping you're right. I mean, Tatis, you know, much was written about the home run draw at the beginning of the season. He's up to 5 home runs now. He's also got 23 stolen bases. Yeah. So he's been playing very well over the course of the last month and more like himself, which is a bit of a relief for me. I just don't know if I'm too far gone to be able to reap the benefits of a really good second half from him. But Pezzana is a very nice player. You know, he's hitting 242. He's got 7 home runs and 12 steals in 272 plate appearances. Very quietly, he's not been making a large ruckus in Cleveland. He just very quietly came up, very unassuming, does his job. He hustles too. If you've watched them, I saw them, the Guardians, play against the White Sox this past week, and he's just a really, really magnificent player. I think he's going to be terrific.
Yeah.
Okay, third base. Austin Riley, 58 overall, versus Max Muncy from the Dodgers here at pick 225.
Yeah, it's been quite the fall from grace for Austin Riley. His K rate has gone up every single year since 2023. He's chasing, he's whiffing. And I wonder if it's just, excuse me, a product of the Braves overusing their players. Like, mm-hmm. He went 3 seasons, I think, in a row where he missed maybe 2 games. And I just wonder if there's wear and tear now on his body that's not allowing him to get back to the way he was. Meanwhile, we've got Max Muncy. He's 35 and still kicking. And he's in the All-Star game, isn't he?
Yes.
Yes, he got the call. So I think going forward, I would actually like I think I'm going to go with Max Muncy, which is weird because I really liked Austin Riley heading into the season, but I can't trust that right now.
There's something not right with Riley. I mean, when you look at the data points behind it, you know, I think we've kind of become programmed to this idea that he's going to hit 30 home runs every year. Yet his last 3 season totals, 2024, 19 home runs, 2025, 16 home runs. This year, 9 home runs with a 208 batting average. He has chipped in 6 steals, which does help you know, ameliorate some of that, I guess, if you want to think of it that way. But I think Riley is overdrafted in a lot of places because the people that feel that, oh, if I don't get Machado or if I don't get J-Ram, Austin Riley would be a nice prize. Meanwhile, if you did something else with that pick in that area of the draft and then got Max Muncy later on, you're probably ahead of the game than if you had taken Riley and, you know, bet on the back of his baseball card.
I got a question for you.
Sure.
Since Max Muncy started wearing glasses, that was April 30th, 2025.
Yes.
With a minimum of 500 plate appearances, where does Max Muncy rank in WAR?
I'll bet you he's in the top 10.
You're not far off. It's 28th overall.
Yeah, he really OBP leagues, he's gold, man. And yeah. And it feels like he hits a home run like every third day. Like you look at the box where you're like, oh, Max Muncy hit another one. You know, he's just a guy that's really underrated on that team. He does a lot of great stuff for the Dodgers, and he's also a really good third baseman, which a lot of people don't recognize. But yeah, I can see scenarios here where maybe somebody would give Riley a shot on a good buy low, but Max Muncy seems to be the better value there. Yeah. Shifting over to shortstop, Gunnar Henderson. What's going on there versus Ernie Clement? So Henderson was a first round pick, 14th overall. Ernie Clement, 287th pick overall.
Yeah, with Gunnar, it was the belief that, you know, he was hurt last year. He was playing through an injury, and that's why he struggled. But what's scary is that he might actually just be a one-hit wonder. His worst pitch against is a fastball. That's not supposed to happen. He's got a 208 batting average against on fastballs. Then again, is Ernie Clement this good? I don't know. He's not necessarily fantasy relevant with, you know, 7 home runs, 2 stolen bases. But, I mean, he does get on base and he does have a good batting average. I think going forward, this is tough. It's tough to go against an all-star here, but I might go Gunner with the hope that, you know, he can finally turn it around and have a better fantasy season than Ernie Clement.
Boy, that's a tough call. You know, I think Clement is a nice player to have as a spare player on your roster and somebody you can throw in different places and help you out. But I think I would take my chances on Gunner here at the very least. It looks like there's a little bit of bad luck here. His expected batting average is actually 20 points higher than what it is at 219. And 16 home runs and 7 steals there is not bad. Obviously, you wish he had more of that 275, 280 batting average that we've come to know from Gunner. And sometimes, you know, sometimes people just have bad years. You know, he ended up last year only getting 651 plate appearances. The year before, I say only, he had 719 plate appearances. That was the year that he had 37 home runs and stole 21 bases and looked like he was really on the come, you know, to be the top shortstop in the game. And now we've kind of cooled our jets on that. So I still think I'm going Gunner here just because I think that, you know, maybe something good can happen there. He is hitting in the 240s in July, which is 20 points higher than where he's at. So, yeah. All right, shifting to the outfield finally here, the last position, and then we can talk about pitchers. We have Julio Rodriguez, who was drafted 9th overall in NFBC ADP versus Brandon Marsh, the all-star from the Philadelphia Phillies.
I'm waiting for Julio to have his breakout month. Once a year, he has a month where he will win you your fantasy league. And we just haven't had that yet. So fingers are crossed that it's going to happen. The numbers and the stat cast, they look the same as always, minus that breakout. So assuming that happens, I think Rodriguez is the pick here. As good as Marsh has been, he's batting 253 against left-handed pitchers and 308 against righties. But even worse, under the hood, against lefties, he's got a 36.5% K rate against them and only 2.1% walk rate. So as long as he can continue hitting well against righties, I think he's going to be a solid pick. But I'm going to take the chance that Julio Rodriguez comes back from this concussion, is fully healthy from it, and can have that that breakout.
Related to that, I have a question for you, follow up on that.
Yeah.
When you look at Julio Rodriguez's splits, it can be a little bit maddening as a fantasy player. in May, he hit 10 home runs and hit 274 with two stolen bases. You think, oh, we're getting back on the hook here. Then he follows that up in June with two home runs, but seven stolen bases instead. So he had eight fewer home runs, but five more steals. As a fantasy player, is that something that bothers you in any way? Do you know what I mean? Like the consistency or the lack of consistency there, does that bother you?
It does a little bit. Excuse me. I know he's a very slow starter. He's not going to be one who's going to get you off to a flying start in the month of April. It's weird that he actually regressed a bit in June, because typically with the warmer weather, he does do better. But I'm still on board with him. And I still think that he's going to be able to come back and give us that 1 month. Like if you're looking at his career splits,
mm-hmm.
July 281, August 320, September and October 297.
Mm-hmm.
So if he can continue that, I think he's the pick here. He does have to come back healthy from this concussion, though. He won't be back this weekend, mm-hmm. and chances are he'll be ready after the All-Star break. But anytime with concussions, things can just linger on and on. So that is something to monitor.
That is a little concerning. Marsh is probably a little bit over his skis right now. I understand that, but he was pressed into service because of the needs in the Philadelphia outfield. They just didn't have any available bodies. And so coming out of that platoon was really necessary for them because they needed him to play, and he's played exceptionally well. The thing about Brandon Marsh that I always find, really kind of giving me pause is the talent is clearly there. I mean, he's got the ability to be able to hit 20 home runs and steal 20 bases. I feel like we've been saying that for years, and now it looks like he's actually finally kind of maximizing that. But as we all know, we do regress back to the mean, both in life and fantasy baseball, and he could be coming back to earth here relatively quickly.
Yeah.
Moving on to starting pitchers, I got a couple here. I know we listed a bunch, but I want to hit two of these really important ones with you. First one, Brian Wu, 36 overall versus Cam Schlittler, who was a 125 overall.
If we're picking one for the rest of the season, I'm going to pick Schlittler simply because I think he's an absolute stud. High K rate, low walk rate, and really he's only had one bad outing all year, where he gave up, wasn't it a four home runs or something like that?
Yes.
Meanwhile, what's concerning to me, Brian Wu is a great pitcher, but it's his home and road splits. He's got a 2.1 ERA and a 0.7 whip at home, but on the road, it's a 6.28 ERA and a 1.43 whip on the road.
Mm.
It's one thing to have, a small variance, but when it's that extreme, there's something there, and I don't know what it is. I know that Seattle's ballpark is obviously the best pitcher's ballpark in baseball, but to have something go as extreme as that, it's kind of concerning. It's the opposite of, Rockies pit batters at home, mm-hmm. and it's something that you have to be mindful of when you're using him down the stretch, especially come fantasy playoffs.
Right.
You might want to look for someone else down the stretch if the Mariners are on the road and he's pitching.
Yeah, you don't want to blow up those precious ratios. One point of contention on Schlittler, Dave, and just wondering if you have any concern about this, because I do. He's thrown 112 innings already this year. He's made 19 starts, and he's coming up to the high watermark of his innings. The most he's ever thrown in professional baseball was 120 innings in 2024. Any concern that there might be some manipulation of his time here, that there might be some roster manipulation or a phantom DL stint to get him some rest before they go to the playoffs? Because Schlittler is one of the best young pitchers in baseball, but are you concerned at all about the number of innings he's thrown?
Yeah, actually, now that you mention it, I would be a little concerned. I know they, in general, when innings are concerned, it's you want to bump them up a little bit. So I'm guessing I could see them trying to get between 150 and 160 mm-hmm. this year. But you're absolutely right that down the stretch, they might actually manipulate his innings or, pull him early or, once a week instead of twice, something like that to stretch him out. Especially if they're going to be trying for a playoff spot in which he's going to be pitching for them too. So
correct.
You make good note there. I want to consider that down the stretch. I still like him more than Wu simply because of those home road splits. Mm-hmm. And because even though he's never been injured, I always think Wu is going to get injured based off all those reports from a couple of years ago,
right,
his elbow and his forearm and just somehow pulling through. But
point. Roster Resources projected him for another 12 starts, and another, you know, somewhere between 65 and 75 innings for Schlittler, which would put him way above where he's been. So you wonder if there will be some Max Fried is healthy and comes back and is ready, and then maybe they shut down Schlittler for a week or 10 days with a knee injury or something of that nature, just to be able to give him a rest.
Yeah, maybe.
The other one I wanted to ask you about that I thought was interesting of the groups that you had here, just for the sake of time, was George Kirby versus Max Meyer. And you and I had talked in the wintertime about Max Meyer and not sleeping on him. And I ended up getting him in several leagues, which has been a boon for me in those leagues. But Kirby's had kind of a strange season again, hasn't he, Dave?
He has. He's got really weird numbers. He's got a 1.32 whip, but he's in the 92nd percentile in walks with a 5.3 walk rate. He doesn't really generate whiffs, but he never really did. And he's always got a low K rate. And it feels like he's turned it down a notch, or he's come down a notch, sorry, ever since he got injured last year. He hasn't really been the same. I know he changed his arm slot last year, and he just doesn't seem as dominant as he once did. Meanwhile, you've got Max Meyer, who just, if he can stay healthy, he's in the right system in Miami where they'll be able to get the most out of him. Mm-hmm. And now that they're going for a playoff run, I think he's going to be one of their key guys down the stretch to actually get them to where they need to go. So if we're picking one rest of season here, I really like Max Meyer. I'm still worried about George Kirby. Mm-hmm. There's something about him that I just can't figure out, and maybe you can right here.
And it's hard to pin down with Kirby, but I think it's really, from what I've seen, it really seems to be questions of efficiency, and the walks are just killing him. I mean, when you put the extra traffic on base, it seems like they almost always score. And so there's a problem with that as well, right? Your stuff is not the wipeout, blowing people out, striking them out. You're relying on ground ball and pitching the contact. And if you got guys on base that you've walked, pitching the contact becomes a little bit more of a dangerous scenario, doesn't it? So yeah. I think that's probably part of the reason that there's issues with Kirby. And Meyer is, you know, a first-round talent. You know, the pedigree is there. And another great reason, guys and girls, to look at this, you know, he's 27 and growth is not linear. People have been waiting for this level of Max Meyer to be healthy and to be this dominant. He's been absolutely outstanding. They're a little bit – XERA is a little bit more bullish on him. They got him a run higher with the expected ERA, but even then it would be less than 4. I think he's just a really good guy to get. If you've gotten him, it's great. Trying to get him is probably going to cost you at this point if you're trying to make a move for him. I've really been pleased to see his strikeout rate buck up, 26% this year. So the Max Meyer era might be here, which is really cool.
So who are you taking down the stretch, Kirby or Meyer?
Again, you know, I look at those things like the splits and see how many innings a guy's thrown, and he's at 108 innings already, Meyer, and so I wonder too if that would be a situation where they might try to shut him down a little bit, or you know, make his starts be shorter in duration, whatnot, you know, put him on pitch limits. I don't know. I haven't heard that they're doing that, but you know, this is a guy that in 24 pitched 57 innings. And last year pitched 64 innings. He put those together. That's about where he is right now. So mm-hmm. I do have some concerns about him tiring down the stretch, although he doesn't really show any signs of fading at this point.
I mean, they do have Braxton Garrett just sitting there in AAA. So
You're a jerk. Such a jerk to me. And the funny thing is everybody who's listening, they all think, oh, Dave's the nice guy and Mike's the – this is like the fourth time today you've totally threw a dig in at me that like people outside of the show won't know about. Like
you have a Braxton Garrett issue?
You're digging, yeah. No, it's not an issue. The issue was that I rostered him. Oh. Thought he was going to be decent. And you know that. And you brought that up on purpose to cause me more pain and suffering today. As if I didn't already have enough pain and suffering. I went to saw Muse last night down in Chicago with my daughter and a friend and his daughter. And I'm a little bleary-eyed this morning trying to sort everything out in front of me. But what a show.
We got Cranky Carter here.
I am not cranky. I'm cranky with you. I'm not cranky with other people. Our friends that are listening, family that's listening, thank you for listening. we'll wrap that section up. That was fun, Dave. Thanks for doing that with me. We'll come back after this next ad break and do our mental health moment. All right, Dave. It's going to be super hot here in Chicago today. I got to get done with the show, go cut the grass, finish up my weekend articles, but not before we have our mental health moment. And our question this week comes from a variety of things that you and I have talked about over the course of time, that when we talk about looking at our past and reflecting on the past and some of the things that we've done and, you know, lessons we've learned, mistakes we've made, do you feel like in your life you learn from your mistakes? And as a second part to that, do you think about what's said to you and work towards fixing things when you are in a mode where you make a mistake? And I have a very specific example for this that I would like to share, but I'll let you go first.
Okay. For me, I think I do learn from my mistakes. I do reflect on things that happen, things I've said, things that are said to me. So I do actually think about it, and I always try and figure out how I can be better the next time, or if this situation mm-hmm. comes up, I can do this. I overthink things. You know that about me.
Sure.
Do I listen to what's said? I think I do listen to what's said. It depends if they're not in this house. I find that in my house, I don't necessarily listen as well as I should to the people that are in this house. Like, I've got my mom who lives downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
It's my mom. Obviously, I know better, right? I've always known better, of course. Or, you know, my sister, my wife, my kids. These are all people that I need to improve on that, because A, they love me and they're coming from a place of love. But B, even listening to my kids more often, I need to remember they're not that little kid anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They are getting older. They are getting smarter. And, you know, their opinions on how to fix something or what we should do about something, they have more and more merit because they have more and more knowledge and experience in life. So if there's anything to take away from this, it's that I do listen, I do reflect, but I could do more with when it comes to my family.
For sure. I think that's probably true for anybody that's listening. It's certainly true for me as well. I had an experience this week that really kind of brought this home for me. We were playing Jack's team. I helped coach Jack's team, and our head coach had to miss the game last week because he was double booked with his other son's game. And I helped out and stepped in, and I lost my mind in the second inning. We won the first inning, and then the second inning we had like a 12 run second inning. We just could not get out of the inning. We booted about five or six different balls that should have been outs, and I let my frustration spill over. And between innings, I pulled all the boys out of the dugout when they were coming back in, and I was hot, and I let them have it. And I said, this effort is lackluster, among other words, and I'd really like to see you guys try. It really feels like nobody really cares right now. It's probably the worst thing I could have said, because then what happens is the boys all kind of shut down and go into their shell because the coach got angry. And I got an email afterwards, which I thought was great. I got an email from a concerned parent who was worried about why I was yelling and that, you know, the kids really just want to have fun. And when I talked to Jack about it after the game, he said, I didn't think that you were wrong. He said, I just didn't like the way you said it. And he said, we did not play well, and you're the coach, and so you have to be able to say stuff like that, but you made it sound personal. And I thought, woof, that's really something to know. So I'm a really competitive guy, you know, and the most competitive things draw the most competitive people. And when I go play baseball, I don't play baseball anymore, but when I coach baseball, I know I never go into the mindset with anything else than we'll figure out a way to win this game today in front of us. Yeah. And I put that ahead of the kids learning. I put that ahead of the kids developing. And I was really pretty embarrassed about how that went down. And I replied to the parent, and I CC'd the president of our league on, and I owned my behavior, which I think is the first step. whether you agree with it or not, you have to own what you did or what other people perceive that you did. You have to own that. And then you have to actually make a plan for what you're going to do to make it be better.
Yeah.
So we play this afternoon, and I'm going to talk to the boys ahead of the game, and I'm going to apologize for the behavior that I had. And just remember that it's the goal is to really stay positive. As I get older, it's really easy to get beat down by life or the political news headlines or whatever it might be. And I think of my brain like a toolbox, and I always want to be trying to gather more tools because you never know what tool you might need for a job. And I always do that at school too, when I talk to kids about, hey, let's give you more things that you can use when those situations happen. And so today I have to have practice a healthier mindset where I am not going to be results oriented. I'm going to be player driven and really focused on that stuff because I don't want to be in that position like I was this past week. And I pull back the layers on that and I look at it, I'm like, well, I'm a special ed teacher by trade. I'm a special ed administrator. So patience should be my middle name. And it's not always. And I reflected back on it, and that game was a particularly hard day here. There were some things that were going on at school that I'm not really at liberty to discuss in terms of student contact and some mental health things that were happening with that. And I was really drained. And then it was really hot outside. So it's like a perfect storm. So for those of you listening, I think the idea is know what the triggers are to that perfect storm when it's starting to build and try to nip it in the bud before you get there. And I did not do a very good job of that this week. And so to me, I think that that's really I reflect on how I've acted in the past at games and how I've lost my cool when I was younger, when I was a player. And I really want to try to reflect on that moving forward and not be that type of person because you just end up looking really bad.
Well, thanks for sharing that. And I think you did something that not many people could do, was take ownership of it. The fact that you forwarded it to, I want to say, for lack of a better term, your boss or whoever is in charge, to say, look, this is what someone said and they're absolutely right. And mm-hmm. I'm going to make better of it. Not many people can do that. And that's the hardest first step to take. But like you did say, you've got to do something about it now, not just words, the actions actually, you know, they're just as important, if not more. But I think that first step, and I'll bet you that parent didn't think you were going to say anything about that. And the fact that you took ownership and apologized and did that, that probably goes a lot farther than anything else for that parent and that family could have ever expected.
Yeah, the best indicator, right, is your performance, right? How you do that moving forward. And so I know that that's a big thing for me these next few games before we hit the playoffs. And I need to be a better example and more control of my emotions as one of the coaches on the team, you know, trying to help the boys figure out some ways to get better and win games, you know? So, Dave, we'll leave it there for this week. We're at right under an hour, which is always our goal, but we did have a quote of the week that you wanted to share. What would you like to leave the audience with today?
Yeah, it's from Joe Torre. And all it says is, there's a lot of knowledge in the game that can be passed down. You just have to be open to it.
Hmm.
Which kind of goes.
I like that. I like that. Will you be watching the All-Star game and the festivities this week?
I will. I will watch the Derby for sure, and I'll tune in for some of the All-Star game, yeah.
Well, I hope that you enjoy the short break that we get, even though I know both you and I are actively writing today. So not necessarily a break for us, but it'll be a nice opportunity to kind of catch our breath here this week and get ready for the second half of the season that'll be coming. That's going to wrap up episode 14 of Breakfast with the Beats. For Dave Funnel, I'm Mike Carter. We'll be back with you again next weekend. Have a great weekend. Take care of yourselves. Be good to each other. Thanks.